From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Accelerate. He's coming down to the 16th pole in front. Thunderstorm on the inside is next. Then Mendelssohn, Gunavera, and Yoshida on the far outside. They're coming to the wire. And Accelerate wins the Breeders' Cup Classic for John Sadler.
Wondergadot's in front, and she's dashed away in the Queen's Plate, ahead by a century and a second. But there's no doubt who's the best today, and it's all about Wondergadot, Wonder Woman herself, demolishing them in the Queen's Plate.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
And they bump there. Game winner on the outside takes the lead. On the inside is Nick Gold, who fights on but will be second best as they come down to the line. He doesn't know how to lose. He's game winner in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. They come to the final 16th. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, the pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, enjoying some time with family here over the Christmas holiday. So I'll be flying solo for what promises to be a fast-moving couple of hours here this morning on this 22nd day of December 2018, the first full day following the winter solstice. Yesterday, the shortest day of the year. Now we can start working the other way and getting a little more daylight back in each and every day, which is welcome news to everybody who is already tired of dealing with wet and cold and dreary conditions that we've had throughout much of the country. But happy to have you with me this morning. 133 days, 9 hours, 48 minutes, and 1 second away from the 2019 Run for the Roses at Churchill Downs. That'll warm you up a little bit. That 133 days is going to go very, very quickly, and we'll be here before we know it. We will be there as your exclusive radio home of the Derby and the Triple Crown in 2019. Happy to be part of that event yet again, every year since 2011. So big things to come into next year. A lot of things still to be determined here in 2018. You have the Eclipse Awards coming up toward the end of January, right before the Pegasus World Cup at Gulfstream Park. And fans can now log on to NTRA.com and vote for the NTRA Moment of the Year. There are 12 different choices, some which I feel are more races of the year as opposed to a moment of the year. But we'll walk through those later in the program. We'll kind of take a look at all 12 of those and kind of share. I'll share my thoughts. We'll talk to guests about who they think or what moment they feel should be the moment of the year for 2018. That also means that the Eclipse Award votes are due, and they will be due right after Christmas, and people with the National Turf Writers Association, I do have a vote, Jude has a vote, will get an opportunity to weigh in on who they feel should be the Eclipse Award winner in many different categories in the sport, but certainly Horse of the Year. And that has become, surprisingly to me anyway, a bigger debate than I had ever expected. People are going to make a case for Accelerate, and people are going to make a case for Justify. I personally think it's pretty cut and dry. I don't think there is that much of a debate, but it's turning into that. And our first guest this morning, Alicia Wins Hughes, who you probably know as the editor of the Blood Horse. She is leaving that position. She has now taken a job which she'll start after the first of the year with the NTRA. She'll be the new director of communications at the NTRA. Going to get a chance to visit with Alicia in our first segment in just about 7 or 8 minutes from right now. She told me she is still on the fence as to which way she's going to vote for Horse of the Year. And again, I find it shocking that this would even be a debate. Take nothing away from Accelerate. What a year Accelerate had. 6 wins from 7 starts here in 2018. Wins the Breeders' Cup Classic and adds 5 Grade 1 victories to his resume here in 2018. Accelerate, in any other year that you didn't have a Triple Crown winner, is a shoo-in for Horse of the Year. Mortal Lock, Cinch, whatever you want to go with. Can't lose. Not this year. Not in my opinion. Not in my opinion, because you have the sport's 13th Triple Crown winner in Justify. A perfect 6-for-6. All of those wins coming in 2018. But, you know, it's interesting that when we talk about this being a debate between Accelerate and Justify for Horse of the Year, and I've said this ever since Justify won the Triple Crown, it doesn't seem to me that Justify gets the respect that he deserves for what was a tremendous accomplishment, winning that Triple Crown. Keep in mind, it wasn't that long ago, 4 years to be exact, that people were saying the Triple Crown is too difficult for the modern day thoroughbred. Remember that? Remember everybody was up in arms. Change the distances. We need to change the spacing of the races. They're too close together. The mile and a half at the end coming 3 weeks after the Preakness, no way. Horses are different now. They can't handle it. Well, American Pharoah came along and put an end to all that debate. But I don't think Justify is getting his due. To even be in a debate for Horse of the Year after accomplishing what he accomplished, and I'll argue this, that his Triple Crown was more impressive than American Pharoah's. And I know American Pharoah ended the 37-year drought from Affirmed in 78 to his Triple Crown in 2015. I get it. I understand that. But think about what Justify accomplished. Didn't debut until February of this year. Didn't have a single start at two. Wins the Kentucky. Remember the Apollo curse that everybody would talk about every single year, Derby week? No horse since Apollo in 1882, 136 years ago, had won the Kentucky Derby without a start at two. Justify did that. Justify went undefeated here in 2018, swept the Triple Crown, and if I'm not mistaken, didn't he beat more horses in those three races, the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont, than any other Triple Crown winner in history? In my opinion, what Justify did was more impressive than American Pharoah, and maybe, I'll argue this, maybe the most impressive Triple Crown in history. I know Secretariat will have an argument there, but maybe the most impressive accomplishment in Triple Crown history, doing what he did. Now, I was 6 years old in 1977 when Seattle Slough came along and pulled off another Triple Crown right on the heels of Secretariat in 73. So I don't recall if Seattle Slough kind of fell into the same category and didn't get the respect that he deserved for winning the Triple Crown. But now when we look back on it historically and we realize what a difficult accomplishment this really is, forget about doing it almost back-to-back. I think now we look at Seattle Slough, we look at Affirmed the following year in 78, and we say, yeah, those were great racehorses. That was a great accomplishment. And I think history will give Justify that same due. I think over time, especially if we go through another drought and we have another, who knows, 10, 15, 20, 30-year drought without another Triple Crown winner, we'll look back and say, you know what? What Justify did was incredible. And how on earth was that horse ever in a debate for Horse of the Year? Again, taking nothing away from Accelerate, it's a tremendous year. But you're talking about a horse in Justify that won the 13th Triple Crown in the history of the sport. Doesn't happen every year. Simply spectacular. And I'm going to talk more about that with Alicia here in the first segment after our first commercial break. That comes up in about 5 minutes from right now. Also going to get a chance to talk to jockey Luis Contreras, who last Sunday at Woodbine recorded milestone win number 2,000. He's one of the good guys in the sport. I'll get a chance to visit with him 8:35 Eastern. We'll look back on that win and some of his top moments in his career. Dave Siegel, who is the president of Trackmaster, which is owned by Equibase, they've launched a new study, a pilot that they launched here at Keeneland, tracking workouts with GPS. We're going to talk to Dave about that experiment and that pilot and see what he has to say and the thoughts and how that may benefit the sport moving forward. He's going to be with me 9 o'clock Eastern time. Cormac Brennick is the Stallion Nominations man over at Airdrie Stud. He will join me at 9:20 Eastern time here in studio to take a look at the Airdrie Stallion roster for 2019. That's part of our Stallion Spotlight, which is presented by Red Brand Fence. And then Mike Willman, the Director of Publicity at Santa Anita, going to join me to wrap it up at 9:40 Eastern Time. The Great Race Place getting ready to open their doors again the day after Christmas. That's the traditional opening day. Mike, as good as it gets when it comes to talking about Santa Anita, I'll get a chance to talk to him 9:40 Eastern Time. Poll question for this morning. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Last week I asked you if you could ask Santa for one thing, one trip to any racetrack, any race, what would it be? What one would you ask for? It blew up. We got tons of answers, varying answers of races and racetracks from all over the world. It was really cool. So this week I want to know, what is the greatest horse racing gift you've ever received? What is the greatest horse racing gift you've ever received? And I'll tell you mine later in the show. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Going to get to our first break. I'll come back, visit with Alicia Wins Hughes, the new communications director at the NTRA. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
FDB stands for Flashy Debut Breakthrough.
Free Drop Billy is on the move, needs to find a seam, and splits horses decisively. Free Drop Billy, who wins it by 2.5 in the end.
FDB stands for Fast Dirt Brilliance.
Into the final furlong of the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. Free Drop Billy opening up by 3. Bravazo in second, but no catching. Free Drop Billy, who wins it.
Free Drop Billy, Union Rags' only Grade 1 winner at stud. New for 2019 at Spendthrift Farm.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day, and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind, absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
A 16th to go. Justify is still there. Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner. It is Accelerate. He's coming down to the 16th pole in front. Thunderstorm on the inside is next. Then Mendelssohn, Gunavera, and Yoshida on the far outside. They're coming to the wire. And Accelerate wins the Breeders' Cup Classic for John Sadler.
Well, there you have it. Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Larry Colmus with the call of both the Belmont Stakes and that Triple Crown victory by Justify. And the Breeders' Cup Classic, the huge win for Accelerate, one of 5 Grade 1 victories on his resume in 2018. That's the debate. That's the debate here. Is it going to be Justify? Will it be Accelerate? Who is voted Horse of the Year? I made my case in the beginning of the program. I don't think there is a debate. I think it's all justify. What we'll see what Alicia Wins Hughes has to say. She's as sharp as it comes when it comes to covering racing. She is the new director of communications with the NTRA. She'll begin that job on January 2nd, leaving her post at the Blood Horse. Alicia, first of all, happy holidays. Welcome to the show and congratulations on the new position.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, no, looking forward to the visit here this morning. And, you know, that is the debate. And I mentioned this at the top of the show when you and I talked yesterday and we talked about having you on the program. You said, look, in full disclosure, I have not decided which way I'm going on this horse of the year thing. It's that much of a debate in your mind?
It is. We've had some tough votes in recent years, you know, Rachel Zenyatta, you know, Curlin Zenyatta, you can go from there. I don't think I've ever been this deep into this deep into the process and still, honest to God, not knowing which way I'm going for a horse of the year. And, you know, I talked to Bob Baffert one day, and after talking to him, I'm like, oh, well, God, how do you not vote for Justify? And then, you know, but I'm like, I'm sure if I spent another 20 minutes on the phone with Costarones, I'd probably be swayed back the other way. And I will say the great thing about this debate, there's no wrong side of the fence that you're going to land upon. You're either going to land on a Triple Crown winner or a horse with five Grade One wins, five Grade One wins and a Breeders' Cup Classic winner. There's not going to be a stupid vote. Cast. I mean, there may be some goofy boats out there, but as far as between these two, there's not going to be a wrong side of defense to kind of come down upon. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm still just kind of debating it back and forth between myself of, you know, is Justify a lock with the Triple Crown? Obviously, you know, that's a huge achievement. Though honestly, his other 3-year-olds didn't exactly flatter him with what they did for the rest of the year after that. I think that's something you got to take into consideration too. Or you reward Accelerate for, you know, if you're going to take horse of the year, the name of the award at face value, horse of the year, he had the longer campaign, and I said, you know, carried weight and showed up on Breeders' Cup Day and beat them there. So it's a tough one. I don't know which way I'm going yet.
I've been saying since Justify won the Triple Crown that it felt different this year, and I think rightfully so. When you had American Pharoah and that 37-year drought, it hadn't happened. Everybody wanted it to happen. We'd been close. It felt different this year with Justify pulling it off just a few years afterwards. Do you feel, I don't think that Justify is getting his due for what he accomplished in pulling off that Triple Crown. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll be honest. If Pharoah doesn't win in 2015, we're probably not even having this debate. Because Justify would have been the Shriek Buster, and we wouldn't even be talking about is this good enough to get Horse of the Year. So, yeah, you're right. It did feel different. You know, I think there's a handful of reasons for that. I think largely, like you said, because we had just seen it with Pharoah, and it was such an emotional experience. Me personally, I didn't think I was ever going to see one. After, you know, he was the first Triple Crown winner I had seen. And I remember after I'll Have Another scratched and retired the day before the Belmont Stakes, I just kind of resigned myself. I'm like, you're never going to see it. You're never going to see it in your lifetime. It's not going to happen for you. So when Pharoah actually pulled it off, I think that was just such a huge moment, an emotional moment for so many people in this industry. And then, you know, we build this thing up as this thing that seemingly people were starting to think wasn't ever going to be achieved again. And then a few years later, here comes with Justify, not only doing it again, doing it, you know, without the foundation of having a 2-year-old season, which we hadn't seen before, doing it in undefeated fashion, doing it relatively easy. You know, he had to fight a bit in the Preakness, but, you know, I think if you talk to Bob, you know, he couldn't train him the way that he wanted to after the Derby with the foot bruise and everything. And basically, the Preakness is what got him fit. You know, which kind of says something there that he you know, kind of ran this horse into shape, and then you got to Belmont, and it was kind of, you know, all she wrote from there. But yeah, I think there's a bit of I think Justify is still a bit of a victim of a Pharoah hangover, if you will.
Yeah, and I wonder. I said this at the top of the show that when Seattle Slough came along after Secretariat a few years later and won the Triple Crown, I was 6 years old. So I don't remember if he was kind of looked upon the same way Justify is being looked upon, saying, oh, okay, well, now it's happened. It's not that big of a deal. But now that we see how difficult it is, and we had that huge gap from Affirmed to American Pharoah, now we look back, and historically we say, yeah, Seattle Slew, he deserves all the credit he could possibly get for winning the Triple Crown. And I think Justify will be looked upon the same way 10, 15, 20 years up the road.
I think so, too. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I wondered the same thing, because I was less than a year old when Seattle Slew won it. So, yeah, I have no memory of that either. I always wonder, I'm like, is this what Slew's connections had to go through, where people kind of being like, eh, you know, you're not secretary, you know, you're not that special.
Right.
I do think, you know, unfortunately, the difference with Justify is we didn't get to see him go on. We didn't get to see him run on. We didn't get to see him face elders. So, he by far had the most abbreviated career. Obviously, Slew ran on. We get, the racing community got to see what Slew could do as an older horse and how great he was in that realm. So I think, I think history looks back on him even more fondly because we were able to see him become even greater as an older horse that you can argue. And then, of course, what he did as a sire is ridiculous. But I think Justify will probably benefit from some distance. I think right now, I think we're just a little desensitized today, if you can believe that. Which I said is crazy because, it was just in 2015 where people were penning pieces of, you got to change the Triple Crown. It's too hard. You got to move it up. We're never going to see it again. We're never going to see it again because of LASIK. We're never going to see it again for this reason. We're never, these horses aren't strong enough to handle it. And now we get 2 and a 3 year spin and they're like, too easy. I don't even know if we get the horse of the year vote. And yeah, I'm including myself in that category because I'm guilty of that since I'm sitting here debating whether I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, and of course those results will be revealed January 24th at Gulfstream Park when the 48th annual Eclipse Awards are held. Horse of the Year, all of the Eclipse Award categories going to be revealed at that point. The other thing that will be revealed is the NTRA Moment of the Year, which fans can go to NTRA.com and vote from 12 different choices. And there are some of these that I have always said, okay, well, that's maybe the race of the year, not necessarily the moment of the year. And it depends on how you look at it, but they run the gamut. It Justifies Triple Crown, Accelerates Breeders' Cup. Both of those are among those 12 choices. Gunrunner's Pegasus. Sports betting being legalized is another choice. Cot Campbell, who passed away this year, the pioneer who shared racehorse ownership with so many. That's another category that you can vote for, or another choice there. And Abel winning the Breeders' Cup, Monomoy Girl, Gary Stevens retiring, John Velasquez just getting 6,000 career victories, all of those among the choices. Which one stood out to you, Alicia, as being the most interesting?
Well, since we've already gone down this path, sure, I will definitely give Justify my vote in this category. Absolutely. I do think his Triple Crown win, as far as moment goes, to me, is the moment of the year. We did have some great moments. I'm not sure if we had such an outrageously standout moment, like maybe in past years that were overly emotional and things like that. Diversify in the Whitney obviously was, in hindsight with Rick Violet's passing was a huge one. I would still go with Justify for moment of the year. It is still the Triple Crown. That is still the biggest mainstream, achievement that could transcend beyond this sport and into the mainstream. So, I don't think there's any question that moment should be the moment of the year.
Yeah, I would agree. And another moment that's listed here, and I touched on it when I went through the list, but that I think is significant is the passing of Cot Campbell, because I think his impact on the sport and his legacy is significant. You look at what he's done and what he created with racing partnerships, and now we see so many people that are running the racing partnerships, all thanks to Cot and his concept. And to me, I think that's first of all, a huge loss for racing, and somebody whose vision and passion for the sport is going to be dearly missed.
Absolutely. I mean, and you hit it right there, with the abundance of partnerships. I mean, look at the top. Look at, who owned with Justify. It was a partnership. Even with Gunrunner, it was a partnership there. And it's really become, you know, the partnerships have really become a thing that I think have become the norm in our becoming kind of the dominant players. And it's not even, you know, you're seeing it obviously among even the top-end operations like a Winstar, like a China Horse Club, who you would think financially you're like, well, they don't need to partner with anybody, but they're doing, you know, but it's that it makes so much financial sense for everybody involved. And I remember talking with Mike Rapoli about this this year, because he had kind of been resistant to kind of going down the avenue of partnership. He said the more he explored it, and he said the more that I could do it with people who I trust, he's like, it just made better sense. Especially, he's like, at the sales, he's like, instead of, you know, if we're all on the same horse, instead of three of us fighting and one of us having to pay $1 million, if we can combine forces and get the horse for $500,000, you know, how much better sense does that make for everybody else in the long run, as far as risk reward factor? But you're definitely seeing the partnerships with these top horses are becoming more and more of a dominant thing. And God bless Todd Campbell. I said he's the godfather of this, and he's, you know, he's had such a tremendous influence. You know, you look at, you know, Eclipse Thoroughbreds, like I said, you know, Aaron Wellman and the work that they've done with him. He's like, you know, it's just, Cat's impact is beyond any words that we can properly come up with to pay tribute to him.
Visiting with Alicia Wins Hughes, who is the new Director of Communications with the NTRA. She will begin that job January 2nd, leaving the Blood Horse. She's been there for the past couple of years, and now looking forward to the new chapter in her life and her racing career. Alicia, what does that job entail? What are you going to be doing with NTRA?
Like I said, just kind of basically serving as, you know, the overall, you know, being in charge of the public relations, collecting and distributing the information and best practices and news and ideas for racing and in the industry, keeping the public informed about, you know, thoroughbred racing and all of its events and promotions and accomplishments. And one thing that I'm really excited about is I feel like the NTRA, they do, you know, they do a lot of really good work that I'm not sure everybody fully understands. And I mean, and I put myself in that, you know, there's some, even when, you know, I'm like, there's a lot of things they're doing that I think that the masses don't recognize how much impact they're having and how much good work they are doing for the sake of the industry. And I'm really excited to kind of get in there and be able to help kind of put some of that more out there and into the forefront within this industry. I mean, just with the safety and integrity work alone, you know, just in talking with them briefly, there's so many things they're doing that you never even hear about. So many things that they're trying to work on to implement at these tracks that I said that you don't even know about, that never even see the light of day. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, you guys gotta show your work a little bit. You gotta, you know, don't be afraid to toot your own horn, because you're really, really doing some good stuff there. And I think, you know, if we can do that, it'll really help people get a better understanding of what the NTRA is, what the work they're doing, and how vital they are within this industry.
Yeah, well, as a fellow media member, I feel like the NTRA made a tremendous choice in bringing you on board in that position, and I really look forward to.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what you can do in that role and the changes you're going to be able to make and the impact you're going to be able to have. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Alicia Wins Hughes with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, she will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. It is the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. You can wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. Alicia, before I let you go, very quickly, I have about 30 seconds here. Our poll question today on our Twitter feed: what is the greatest horse racing gift you have ever received? How about you?
Oh, God. It's not technically a gift because I bought it myself, but I'm still going to put it in my APND halter.
Good call.
My APND halter. It's nice and worn and got some dirt and hair in it, and it's APND, and he is my heart. And that is, if the house is on fire, I grab my cat first and that halter second. I'm going to assume that my husband will be already on his way out, but that's my APND halter.
Yeah, every man for himself at that point, right?
Yeah.
Alicia, appreciate the visit. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and again, congratulations on that new position.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks again. You have a great holiday.
All right, you too. Alicia Wins Hughes here on HRRN. Let's do this. Running a couple minutes behind, Luis Contreras is coming up at 8:35 Eastern. Our Industry Star of the Week, which is presented each week by Stuart Morris, comes up at 8:50 Eastern time. So in deference to a very busy schedule, this is typically where we would bring you your Lexus Legends of the Turf story. But again, because we're trying to get everybody in on a very busy program here this morning, we'll bypass the story. We will have a word for the Lexus store of Lexington. And, of course, I tell you every week, on the corner of New Circle and Liberty, right here in Lexington, Kentucky, the godfather, Mike Hendricks, you go see them. They are horse people. You're going to go to the Lexus store. You're going to talk horse racing. Just be ready for that. You're going to be there a while talking horse racing. At some point, you'll have the opportunity to test drive one of those new Lexus. And if you haven't done it yet, you're in for a treat. Trust me. The vehicles will sell themselves. But you know what makes the difference? The people make the difference at the Lexus store. And that goes from the time you walk through their door to the time you make your purchase to the time that follows after your purchase and all the years that you enjoy that new vehicle. The people make the difference. They're horse people. They're committed to supporting the horse industry. Make sure you do the same at the Lexus store of Lexington. We're back right after this. Luis Contreras comes up in just a couple minutes.
This is the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
All right, we got a brand new wheat sub here. One grain bread. Do I hear any takers? One grain bread. All right, what about two grain bread? Let me get a taker for two grain. What about you, Jimmy John's? It's a firm head shake. No from Jimmy John's. How about three grain sub bread? Three is not enough. How about four grain? Who wouldn't want four grains? Jimmy John's still a no. Let's go 5, 5, 6, 7, 8. Want to make it rain? 8 grain, Jimmy John's still a no. All right, what about nine grain wheat bread?
Wheat, yeah, we'll take it.
That's Jimmy John's new 9 grain wheat subs. Going once, going twice, sold.
Try our new 9 grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat, yeah, freak yeah.
Heard about the new 3E tractors from John Deere?
What's new?
New look, better maneuverability than those other color tractors, added conveniences like onboard diagnostics to make for an easier day, and all-around greater performance.
Well, sounds interesting.
They also have one of the lowest sticker prices in the industry.
Sounds like I'm in.
Just head to your John Deere dealer. I'm sure they'll take care of you.
Sounds like they already have.
Introducing the all-new 2018 John Deere 3E Series tractors. More functionality, same affordability.
Adena Springs Stallion, Mucho Macho Man. A precocious juvenile, a classic three-year-old, and dominant older horse.
For Rajiv Baraj, Mucho Macho Man wins the Risen Star.
Mucho Macho Man in front, followed by Himbook, who continues to close ground, but will run out of racetrack as Mucho Macho Man wins the 126th Suburban.
Mucho Macho Man Declaration of War will take charge of Final Man. Mucho Macho Man!
Mucho Macho Man's first crop includes black type runner Bell Laura and TDN Rising Stars Mucho Gusto with trainer Bob Baffert and Fortin Hill in the barn of trainer Chad Brown. In the sales ring, yearlings by Mucho Macho Man have proven popular, selling for up to $170,000, with his first two-year-olds bringing up to $625,000. Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adena Springs. Visit AdenaStallions.com.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy John's.
And this could be the chance for Luis Contreras now. He's a macho man. getting his act together, and he's a macho man on the outside, races up to change at the top, and he's a macho man, and Luis Contreras get 2,000, and it's going to be a tremendous win from the back. He's a macho man first. Second placing's got to change at the top, a Gabaway Fast Ferry, and also there Mayan Ghost and Frankie Barone, 146.46.
Welcome back, Mike Penna in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Happy to have you tuning in coast to coast and around the world here on HRRN. Listeners in 160 countries have made the Horse Racing Radio Network their home for racing coverage this year. Appreciate you doing that each and every week, and happy to have you back with me. Robert Geller had the call of that maiden victory, first start for He's a Macho Man. It was a significant win for jockey Luis Contreras, who recorded milestone win number 2,000 last Sunday at Woodbine. And we are efforting Luis right now, expecting to have him aboard in the next couple of minutes, at least hoping that he'll be able to join us here this morning and look back on that particular victory. But you think about the career of Luis Contreras and what he's been able to accomplish racing predominantly in Canada. You know, he races here in the States too, but he's kind of made a name for himself in Canada. He's a two-time Sovereign Award winner as Canada's outstanding jockey. He did that back-to-back in 2011, in 2012. He's one of the go-to guys, if not the go-to guy, in Canada for trainer Mark Cassie. They have a great relationship, and Luis has ridden some big-time winners for him. You think about what he did this year. In 2018, Luis recorded 12 stakes wins in Canada and here in the U.S., including a repeat victory in the Grade 1 Northern Dancer Turf at Woodbine. He's good. He's really, really good. And he's been good for a very long time. And now he reaches that milestone win number 2,000 last Sunday. And Luis is with us now here on HRRN. Luis, welcome to the program, my friend.
Hello. Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for spending a little time here. Congratulations on number 2,000.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. So take me back to last Sunday. You didn't have to wait long because, unlike some jockeys that get close to a milestone and they can't win, all of a sudden you started rattling off wins in the days leading up to this. You were one win away going into Sunday. You get aboard He's a Macho Man. Take me back to that moment when he's coming through the lane and you cross the finish line and you get to number 2,000.
Yeah, it's just coming. That was the first time I started, and I wasn't really expecting to win my 2,000 with the horse, because I wasn't really showing anything in the morning, but coming to the stretch, I just, by the color, feel a lot of power on the horse, and it just took me to the wire.
Who was there with you? Did you have family members there or friends, or how did that work?
I had what? Sorry?
Did you have some family with you last Sunday when accomplished it? Who was there?
Yes, I have my family, my wife and my kids, and they're there with me in the truck. And
did you know that you were close to that milestone win?
Yeah, well, I know that. But since Friday, when I started, when I was riding, I was like six away on Friday, and Saturday I won four, and the Friday I won one, and so I was for Sunday. It was the last day of racing on Woodbine, and I know I got the chance to win my 2,000 on Woodbine, and I just keep riding. And
yeah, you keep riding, and it paid off. Again, now with 2,001 victories, he went ahead and added another one for good measure. So he's now at 2,001 as jockey Luis Contreras. Luis, take me back to the beginning. You started riding in Mexico when you were very young. Take me back to the beginning. How'd you start riding, and how'd you fall in love with the sport?
Oh yeah, well, I started riding in Mexico when I was 15 years old, and well, over there in Mexico, I rode for 4 years, and I won over there pretty much like 650 wins. By those wins doesn't count in North America, so I'll be right now. I have like 2,060-something wins.
Yeah.
But here in North America, that was my 2,000, and I was so excited and looking forward to win the 2,000 here in North America.
What made you want to be a jockey?
I don't know. Since I was really young, I was going to the track to see my horses, my dad, all the time because he was a trainer. My uncles was their trainers, and since I was little, I was going to the track. I don't know. I don't have any other jockeys in my family, but I just followed. I don't know. I just fall in love with the horses and pretty much going every day. And I want to go there. I want to be in the track more than the school. So I don't know. It's been a great journey in my life, and I really, really love to be around horses.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that you have been really good. You've been a top-notch rider for a long time, and people might not know the name Luis Contreras like they do John Velasquez or Javier Castellano, because a lot of your success, even though you've done well in the United States, a lot of your success has come in Canada. Why has Woodbine in Canada been so good to you in your career?
Well, good Canada has been really, really great for me, and I love the place and I love the people. When I had the opportunity to go to Canada, Steve Asmussen took me to Canada, and I wasn't really sure what's going on over there. But the first time I rode over there and I saw the people and the track and everything, I just fell in love over there in Canada, and I make Canada my home, and I'm really, really happy over there. And
yeah, a long way from his native Mexico, but Luis Contreras making his mark north of the border in Canada and, of course, here in the United States. Luis, there are several graded stakes wins on your resume, grade ones, grade twos, grade threes. When you look back on your career, what are a moment or a couple of moments that stand out to you and you're never going to forget?
Well, you're talking about state races. I'm pretty sure that the Queen's Plate is one of my favorites. I don't know. That's because it's the prestige to win the race and the feelings after you cross the wire first, and pretty much the Queen's Plate, it'll be my best.
Yeah. Yeah, we love that race. We've come up there to broadcast the Queen's Plate the past few years here on the network. We'll be back there again to make that broadcast this year, and it's one of our favorite trips of the whole year, and it's such a special race, and it means so much to Canada, and I think that's what makes it so special. How about a favorite horse? Do you have a favorite horse or two that you've ridden?
I got so much. I don't know if I can say the ones I won with the Queen's Plate, but I have another one I really love to run over there on the grass, and his name is Johnny Bear.
Yeah.
And this year we won a great one, and he's just a fun horse to ride because he runs all the time, like a mile and a quarter, mile and a half, and in the grass, and he's so, I love to ride a horse, and pretty much, I don't know, this year I won the great one with him, and I was really, really happy. I just love to ride a horse on the grass and on a long distance.
Yeah, and it's great when you get a horse like Johnny Bear who gives you his best every single time. And, of course, as you said, you won the Grade 1 Northern Dancer Turf this year. He won it last year, too. He's a really, really good horse, and Luis Contreras is a really, really good jockey. And now 2,000 wins in his career. Luis, really appreciate the visit, my friend. We've got to get to a commercial break, but appreciate you being with me for a few minutes. Safe trip every time you get a leg up, and a very happy holidays, my friend.
All right. Thank you so much, and I wish you the best. All the Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Luis Contreras here on HRRN. And, yeah, good guy. Really good guy. And, again, somebody who is having just a ton of success. There's no other way to put it. He has just had a lot of success. He's been very good. He's been very good for a very long time. Like all of our guests who appear on the show, Luis is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at embracetherace.com. We'll get to a break. We'll come back. The Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, is next. And a very busy second half of the show. That's all ahead on the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
2 years ago today, Motown scored an authoritative victory in the Grade 2 Remsen in his stakes debut before going on to demonstrate an impressive turn of foot when winning the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby at 3. New to Coolmore America for 2019, Motown is a highly credentialed, beautiful young son of Uncle Mo, who has established himself as a leading sire with his runners on both dirt and turf. Motown is very attractively priced, and being such a good-looking horse, it is no surprise that he is proving incredibly popular with breeders. Call Coolmore America to book to him now before it's too late.
Power. Tappert is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Tappert. Tappert still in front. Master Plan too late. Tappert will do it.
Passion.
It's Tappert. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill. Well done, young man. We'll report home 4 lengths to the good.
Performance.
Tappert has taken the lead. Tappert and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Tappert and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Tappert, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Tappert set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best bred sons of Tappert ever to enter stud. Out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Grade Stakes producer, Appealing Zofi. Tappert, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Racing fans, there's only one place to be the day after Christmas, and it's opening day at Santa Anita on Wednesday, December 26th. Come early on opening day. First post time for a blockbuster 10-race card is at 11:30 a.m., and admission gates open at 9 a.m. As always, our traditional 2019 wall calendar, which this year honors three Santa Anita-based Triple Crown champions, Affirmed, American Pharoah, and Justify, is free with paid admission. Again, special early first post time on opening day is at 11:30 a.m., Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Airdrie Stud is proud to introduce McCracken for the 2019 breeding season. A brilliantly talented son of the great Ghost Sapper, McCracken recorded a dominant, undefeated two-year-old campaign, culminating with a sensational win in the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club. A multiple graded stakes winner and track record setter at 3, McCracken retires as the only two-year-old graded stakes winning colt by his elite sire, Ghost Sapper. Beautifully balanced from a deep female family, McCracken has everything it takes to be an important sire. Airdrie Studs McCracken. Think about it.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Past Saturday at Gulfstream Park, Sir Anthony pulled off an upset of Audible, who was a heavy favorite in the Harlan's Holiday Stakes. Sir Anthony, trained by Anthony Mitchell, who is based in Chicago at Arlington Park, went down there to Florida, got the money. Huge win for Sir Anthony, and probably the most important win of trainer Anthony Mitchell's career. This past week, Jude and I had a chance to sit down for a full hour on our trainer talk show, which is presented by Fasig Tipton. And we sat down with Anthony. We talked to him about that race. We talked to him about his career. And because of that win, Anthony is our industry star of the week for this Saturday morning, all presented by our friend Stuart Morris. And here's what Anthony had to say about his career and about that huge victory last Saturday at Gulfstream Park.
You know, I was just so delighted for everybody. It was a great effort by the horse, take nothing away from the horse. But I'm also so grateful for everybody involved, my team here in Chicago, my longtime owner, Mr. Otto, and for, you know, Mr. Hernandez. You know, he rode a great race. When these things come together, they're very, very special for lots of reasons. But most of all is when you've sat down and, you put your plan together, the what ifs, should we, shouldn't we, and our plan was kind of unconventional, but it panned out. And the greatest thing is when you sit down, you put pen to paper, and you get the result you was looking for, nothing better. You know, you've really accomplished everything that you wanted to do, is well thought out, executed brilliantly, and you've got a result, the result you wanted.
And you mentioned the owner, Mr. Otto, Richard Otto Stables, the formal name of the ownership group. Tell me a little bit about Mr. Otto and that relationship you have with him.
Our relationship goes back 20-something years now. I first met Mr. Otto when I was working for Richard Duchessois on his farm at Hillendale, up here in Barrington. Mr. Otto was an owner there. He had his broodmares there. He foaled his foals there. But he also sent horses back to the farm for layups. I'd never met Mr. Otto before until he come in the barn one day and said to me, I've got a horse at the track I'd like to send back to the farm. It needs some TLC and, you know, it needs a little work done on him, and hopefully you can get it done. Well, the horse come back, we did the TLC, we did the work, sent it back to the racetrack, and he kept winning some races. So that was my first introduction to him, but of course, you know, he was delighted with the results and all, and started sending me a few more back, and we got some more results with those. So that's pretty much how it all started out, and then we went on to do some better things, firstly with Summer Miss and Julie's Prize, and then we went on with Lovely Afternoon. She was a nice horse. Talio Dixie, she was another nice horse that we had. Lemonade Kid, he was second in the graded Stars and Stripes up there at Arlington. But he also had, I mean, going back to Summer Miss quickly, she was a very good Illinois bred, ended up being Horse of the Year.
Yeah, well, it's tough to win a graded stakes anywhere, and I remember the day Summer Miss won the Thoroughbred Club of America Stakes.
I mean, in fairness, the other day, the Harlan's Holiday probably was the most important race I've ever won, but my most favorite race was the Thoroughbred Club of America, without doubt, easy, hands down.
Yeah, well, whatever you did, it worked. You said that you would rank that particular win in the Harlan's Holiday is the most important victory in your career, not necessarily your favorite, but your most important. How come?
Because going into the Thoroughbred Club of America, she was already proven that mare. I mean, she deserved her shot in it. With this horse, early on this year, I mean, his form was not the greatest. It's kind of muddy. And really didn't know where we was at with him until the light went on in the Bruce D. Once that went on, we came back in a couple of allowance races here at Hawthorne, but to me that they were still very impressive. And we thought now was probably the time to take on some graded stakes and just see what, you know, see where we're at. Let's get a line on what type of horse we got. Well, obviously, going in there, I looked at the nominations, and there's Audible, and I thought, oh, man, you know, of all horses in there, this son of a gun's in there. But, you know, we said, let's take a shot. Let's take a shot. So going in there and not really having much respect from from most out there, and popping up to run the race he did. I mean, his numbers were good. His numbers were getting better from the Bruce D through these last couple of allowance races here at Hawthorn. But certainly, numbers were not really good enough to be audible. So jumping up and achieving all of that, beating audible, you know, the way we did, which was, you know, people will argue with me, but we beat him fair and square. You know, that was very, very important to me. When the odds are stacked against me and we come through and we can perform the way we did and the plan comes together the way it did, that was what was really, really important to me. And, you know, on a 1-9 shot, on a horse that obviously loves the Gulfstream track, winning the Fountain of Youth and then coming back and winning the Florida Derby, my little Illinois bred just come through and, you know, he got the job done.
Yeah,
so in that respect, that is why it's probably the most important to me.
Well, Anthony, you think about that win, and you said it's your most important win. You've had some big ones throughout your career. We've touched on a couple of those, but I want to go back a little further here. And you talked about being around the farm in Illinois, and you talked about Mr. Otto, the owner of that horse, and what he meant to your career. Take me back to the very beginning. Where did Anthony Mitchell first fall in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing?
Well, that was back in Brighton in England. When I was a kid at school, my neighborhood really wasn't the best neighborhood. But, it was respectful, but it was rough. And one day I came home from school, and my father, in his infinite wisdom, God rest his soul, bought me a pony. So I come back to the house, and I said, there's a pony in the front yard. So I'm just staring in amazement. What's this horse doing here? So went into the house. My father said, there it is. You're going to learn to look after horses. Now, my father was a butcher, so there's no relevance there. But anyway, so that's what started out. At school at the time, there was a work experience program. And I spoke to the guy in charge of it and said, you know, my father's bought me this horse. I don't know why, but I need to be somewhere where I can learn how to look after a horse. So I was kind of expecting to be at a riding stable or something like that. But in fact, what he did was he got in touch with Charlie Moore, who was a steeplechase trainer in Brighton. And Charlie said, bring him up here. Let's see. So I went up there with my father and he said, okay, well, we're going to take you on. And I was 14 at the time, so I hadn't left school. Went up there and spoke to Charlie and started out at weekends and slowly but surely dropped out of school and started working there full time. So that's how I started out in racing, working for Charlie Moore. And I worked for Charlie for, I guess, 14, 15 years before I come to this country. And he taught me, you know, everything from mucking stalls to galloping to trying to race ride to eventually being his head lad. His son, Gary Moore, was a jockey in the yard and was the assistant trainer. So I took the next tier as his head lad.
Whatever happened to the pony?
Well, you know, as funny as in the end, the pony weren't fast enough. I like a little bit more speed. So we actually did sell the pony to Charlie's daughter, Candy Morris, who was a very accomplished steeplechase rider there as well. But she also did pretty good on the flat as well as. So she had him as a pony club horse and actually did pretty good with it. So the pony stayed within the yard, but Charlie's daughter Candy had it.
That's Anthony Mitchell, our industry star of the week. That segment presented by Stuart Morris every Saturday here on the show. Don't forget that Stuart offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation and wants to thank their owners, their clients, and his entire team. Their success is because of you, and Stuart is cognizant of that each and every day. With multiple stakes horses over the past 3 years that include Henley's Joy, R, Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart is your source for success at the highest levels. So check out the Stuart Morris consignment at all the major sales coming up in 2019. And my thanks to Anthony for taking the time to visit with us on Trainer Talk this past Wednesday night. That full hour interview is available for you to listen to via podcast on our website right now at horseracingradio.net. But you heard him say, Sir Anthony, maybe his most important victory, not necessarily his favorite. He talked about that too, but maybe the most important victory in his career. And it happened last Saturday, defeating heavy favorite Audible, who now on the fence for the Pegasus World Cup at the end of January. Of course, we are not. We will be there for the Pegasus, no doubt about it. We're going. You'll hear the Pegasus World Cup exclusively here on the network. It begins a very busy 2019 broadcast campaign here on HRRN. Our full schedule for 2019 will be posted shortly on our website, so keep checking back. We'll have that up there with all the race broadcasts we'll bring your way in the new year. All right, second half of the show kicks off with Dave Siegel, the president of Trackmaster. He'll talk to us about a new pilot program that Equibase is studying with Keeneland using GPS technology to track workouts. It's kind of fun. We'll talk to Dave coming up 9 Eastern. Cormac Brennick, the Stallion nominations man at Airdrie Stud, will be with me at 9:20 Eastern. And Mike Willman, the director of publicity at Santa Anita, 9:40 Eastern time. That's all ahead right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's these two, 1-2 down to the finish. Enabled and Magical, and they're well clear of the others. Racing royalty, Enabled and Frankie Dettori. The ARC winner is the Breeders' Cup Turf winner, too.
It is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside, tenfold. Bravazo, Justify, he's unstoppable. He won the Preakness.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum.
Monoboy Girl is 16th to go. Blue Prize, Wildcat finishing well on the inside. Then comes Midnight Pizzo. Monoboy Girl has won the distance.
Justify from Gronkowski. He's just perfect. And now he's just immortal. Justify is the 13th Triple Crown winner.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios this morning. The pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld, enjoying some family time for Christmas. So you're stuck with me. One more hour to go. Very busy first half of the show, by the way. My thanks to Alicia Wins Hughes from the NTRA, new director of communications there, and to jockey Luis Contreras for being with me in the first half of the program. If you missed any portion, all you have to do is head back to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our programs, horseracingradio.net. And a full podcast of this show going to be available for you right after 10 o'clock Eastern time when we finish up here this morning. Again, Dave Siegel, the president of Trackmaster, set to join me in this segment. Hoping to get in touch with him. We're working on that for you now. As I told you, they are working on a pilot program. They have done this. Equibase, which Trackmaster is an Equibase company. Equibase has done this at tracks around the country where they have used GPS technology at Woodbine, at Golden Gate, at Laurel, and at Pimlico as the official timer for those tracks. The GPS technology partner of theirs is Total Performance Data. They're based in the UK. And they have more than a dozen tracking systems deployed over in the UK, trying to bring that technology here. So hopefully Dave will be able to join us. If not, I'll tell you a little bit more about that here in just a minute and some of the things that they've been able to do and some of the things that came out of that pilot study recently here at Keeneland. I think it's a neat concept. It's pretty cool. Threw out a poll question this morning, top of the show. The poll question, in the spirit of Christmas and the giving season, what is the greatest horse racing gift you have ever received? And I think everybody that's a horse racing fan at some point gets a horse racing gift from somebody that they know. At least most people do. I certainly have. I'll tell you mine here in just a minute. But what is the greatest horse racing gift you've ever received? You can comment now at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And some of the comments coming in, I think I actually have this very same picture, by the way, a framed and matted 7-foot-long 1973 Belmont Teletimer photo. Secretariat winning the Belmont Stakes in 73. I think I have that very same photo in my living room now. But I didn't get it as a gift. I had to earn mine. Got it at a silent auction for the benefit of the PDJF. So it cost me a little bit, but it's a cool picture. Really cool picture. Some of the other responses coming in. Let's flip through here the Twitter feed. Framed Big Brown Preakness pick and bobblehead. This gentleman says, I work for UPS, attended the Derby and Belmont that year. That's a cool gift. That's really neat. So weigh in now. What is the greatest horse racing gift you have ever received? For me, well, it's pretty simple. After Holy Bull passed away last year, being a massive Holy Bull fan, my favorite horse of all time, the folks at Darley were so kind. They knew how much of a fan I was and sent a lock of Holy Bull's hair from his tail that I now have with the Holy Bull halter in my house. I have the two of them together. That is by far the greatest horse racing gift I have ever received. And my thanks to Dan Pride and the folks at Darley for sending that along. It is a really special thing to have something like that from your favorite racehorse. So I want to know, what's the favorite one, the greatest one that you have ever received? You can do that right now on Twitter and on Facebook. Dave Siegel is the president of Trackmaster, which is, of course, an equibase company. I told you about the study they're doing at Keeneland using GPS technology to track workouts. And Dave is with me now up early out in California. Dave, appreciate the visit. Good morning.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. How about for you? What's the greatest horse racing gift you've ever received, Dave?
Well, the way I would call it a gift is probably the day I decided to buy a standardbred. It ended up launching a great avocation for me that lasted about 15 years, the last 10 of which included actively engaging in the sport as a driver. That very first horse that I have bought, I still have. He's 19 years old. I ride him still. I drive him. I do everything with him. And it kind of opened up my world to have an equine pet, but also, as I said, to really be involved at the ground level of the sport.
Yeah, what a great story. And the gift that keeps on giving, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. I'll send you my vet bills. You better believe it.
Hey, what are kids for? They're supposed to cost you money.
Yeah.
Dave Siegel with me here on HRN. All right, let's talk about the pilot study that was recently done at Keeneland using GPS technology to track workouts. Tell me all about it.
Well, we got to go backward just a little bit.
Yep.
And put it in the right context. So actually, when Equibase was formed back in 91, there was the vision of the electronic tracking of horses, rather than doing it the way we do now, which is a combination of beam timers and humans with binoculars. So it's taken a pretty long time, but a few years ago we had consultations with a number of potential GPS vendors. We were particularly impressed with one. We've gone on effectively to do a joint venture with them, and about 2 years ago did an installation at Golden Gate Fields for racing. Now, all along, the GPS technologies had a couple of kind of core ideas associated with it, versus in particular the only other real electronic tracking system that's been in the market for about 10 years, which is Trackus. And Trackus, one, is very, very expensive, as you probably know. Also involves a fair bit of infrastructure, literally physical installation stuff on the racetrack. So one of the great appeals of GPS was that it had minimal impact on the physical plan of a racetrack. It's two computers typically one upstairs in like a chart calling office, one downstairs in the jocks room, a couple of antennas, and that's it. The rest of it, I guess I would say the U.S. Armed Forces kind of did the work for us in terms of putting out the satellite navigation system that's up there. And on top of that, we all know as consumers that GPS has become more and more useful and more accurate, you know, really year in, year out. Like our iPhones or Android phones are pretty good items right now in terms of the accuracy of the GPS. So we kind of had four areas that we thought GPS could help racing today and the overall experience of racing. So the first one is chart calling. And today, where we have our humans looking through binoculars, they do a really, really good job. But we thought that GPS would be a more accurate representation of the race. But, and related to that, rather than, let's say, 4 or 5 points a call that you're used to that have been there for the last 100 years, there's really infinite numbers of points of call or measurements that you can take along the racetrack with GPS, as well as additional data, position, how far off the rail they are, how fast they're going, what their rate of acceleration is, what their positive or negative. There's a device that measures stride length, so you can see how that changes during the race. So we'll call it, you know, super, like, I wanted to say chart calling on steroids, but maybe that's not a good word to use in a horse racing conversation. So really enhanced chart calling would be one. The second is to be used as a timing system. And the advantages that GPS has as a timing system is that it comes back to the infrastructure. You probably know that timing system has to have a beam across the racetrack, which is, and it's two pieces of metal coming up from the track. And you have to have one anytime you want to have a time recorded. And this gets particularly tricky on turf courses, because every time you move that rail out on turf courses, the circumference of the track gets bigger. So you really need to move those timing devices or have them set in different locations. And if you think about wanting to have a beam every 16th of a mile, let's say, for every possible race distance, and you had five lanes, you're talking about kind of 80 beams on the inside and the outside of the track. So it's 160 things to maintain. They all have to have a wire connected to it. They're, I'll call it minimal, but still safety hazards for if horses get loose. It's just a ton of stuff to maintain. Where the notion of GPS, basically, the way to think of it is a virtual timing eye. You can put it anywhere you want, because we can map using GPS technology, you know, where the 16th pole is, or it doesn't matter, any distance you want. So timing was kind of, I use the word pillar, the second pillar of GPS. The third one is kind of related to the first, in that it's the position of the horses, but it's to be used to drive graphics. So I'm sure you have seen the depiction of horses moving around the track through Trackus. They do a really good job on that. And also some of the post-race stuff that can, like, instantaneously show the speed of the horses, the distance traveled, stride, other things, but not waiting for a chart to be processed. It could go up instantaneously after the race. So it can enhance and broadcast. And, in fact, in some places where video may not even – or video streaming may not be available – let's say in places in the world where there not may not be enough bandwidth, let's say animated representation of races could be done utilizing that GPS data. So all of that is the stuff I'm not going to talk about, but that kind of, that's not what you asked about, but that kind of lays the groundwork for the fourth area, which is workouts, and saying, well, you have the same GPS infrastructure in place, which is what I described, plus the trackers that are worn somewhere on the horse. And in racing, it's kind of simple, the logistics. All the horses come together. You know, they're all in the paddock. They all get checked in. So the logistics of putting trackers and saddle cloths isn't all that complicated. Workouts, while the technology is exactly the same, in fact, it's even better than racing, because there's kind of, for any given horse, there can be a different start point to the workout. There could be a different end point. They don't necessarily all end at the finish line. The idea of these, we'll call them virtual timing eyes, work really well. And on top of that, workouts today, you know, pretty much just have a final time. At least that's what's published. And here you could have fractional or really infinite times. So we said, okay, why would we not use this same system for workouts? And there's a really good answer to that, because it's very difficult in terms of the logistics, not in terms of the technologies. All the horses don't come together at the same point. They're spread out all over the racetrack. They don't wear consistent saddle pads. You know, they wear the saddle pads of the trainer. So the question was a little bit, will the technology work? And the larger question is, how can we make the logistics work that this, that there would be net benefit for everybody? So about 8 months ago, a combination of the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission and Keeneland came to us, having seen or read about the initial installations and pretty good success at like Golden Gate and Laurel, where we had been, and asked us the question, can you use this for workouts? And we'd like to see it demonstrated. And the answer was yes, absolutely can use them for workouts. There are some challenges, which I'll be happy to talk about with you, Mike. But we'd like you to come to Keeneland in the fall and let's see this thing work. So they recruited, I know, three trainers, and we gave them four trackers each and told them to go ahead and use those. And by the way, the trackers in racing, in workouts, go on the rider's arm because they bounce around from horse to horse rather than on the horse. So four riders were assigned, and we ended up doing about 100 workouts. And long story short, the system from a technical standpoint worked incredibly well.
He's Dave Siegel, president of Trackmaster, an Equibase company, and talking about the GPS technology, which is now at least in the process of being used, and as you heard him say, for so many different facets of the industry, including workouts and tracking those workouts, and maybe doing it more accurately and even providing more information to trainers and to horse players as we move deeper into this process. Dave, I have to get to a commercial break here, but want to thank you for laying that out and kind of filling us in. At some point, we'll have to get you back on, and we'll do a more in-depth discussion as things proceed. But really appreciate the visit, my friend. Want to wish you a very happy holidays and a very happy new year.
Very good. I appreciate you having me on.
All right,
Dave. Happy holidays to you, too.
You, too. President of Trackmaster. And, again, some interesting things there. A lot to digest as Dave went through all of those different facets of what that GPS technology can and is being used for currently, and some of the things that they're hoping it can be used for in the future. Time now for your Blood Horse news update and a look at the top headlines from bloodhorse.com. Winx to continue racing in 2019. That's cool news. Australian Wonder Mare Winx will race in 2019. Connections have confirmed that, but an overseas trip is not part of their plans. A winner of her past 29 starts, 22 at the Group 1 level, Winx was last seen securing another slice of history in October when she captured a record-breaking fourth Ladbrokes Cox Plate. That's a Group 1 at Moonee Valley. Trainer Chris Waller announced that welcome news December 21st when he revealed the schedule that could see the daughter of Street Cry return to action in the February 16th Star Apollo Stakes, a Group 1, at Randwick. And that's your Blood Horse news update for this morning. For more industry news and headlines, head over to bloodhorse.com. Blood Horse, the industry's only weekly magazine and tablet, has been covering thoroughbred racing and breeding for more than 100 years. If you want to follow the sport and the industry, there's no better way than with Blood Horse Magazine. And here's a special offer you can take advantage of right now. Save 70% off the cover price, plus get a 2019 Blood Horse wall calendar, which is valued at $24.95, absolutely free. All you have to do is go to bloodhorse.com/winter special. When I come back, going to be joined by Cormac Brennick, who is the Stallion Nominations Man over at Airdrie Stud. We'll talk about the Airdrie Stallions in our Stallion Spotlight segment, which is presented by Red Brand Fence. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Castleton Lions is home to blue blood sprinter Justin Phillip and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti. Justin Phillip is represented in 2018 by the exciting stakes winning filly Safe to Say and stakes placed runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing. While seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti has produced Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong, along with Canadian classic hero Sir Dudley Diggs and Miss Technicality, winner of the Juvenile Filly Stakes at Kentucky Downs. Justin Phillip and Gio Ponti at Castleton Lions.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th. A program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
This is a scintillating performance from Creative Course.
But look at the heart of American freedom. American freedom, Florent Giroux. American freedom is all heart.
But Cairo Prince has run away. Cairo Prince and Luis Saez with an emphatic win in the Holy Bull.
McCracken on the outside, gaining with every stride, and now colors the leader. Here's McCracken on the outside. McCracken remains unblemished and will take to Sam Davis.
Collected is in front. Arrogate closing on the outside. It's a Bob Baffert 1-2, but Collected going to win it. Collected and Martin Garcia won the Pacific Classic.
Yeah, how about those performances from the Airdrie Stallions? All of those race clips that you just heard, all of those outstanding racehorses, now standing stud at Airdrie. And boy, they are really, really good. And here to fill us in on all the details in our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence is Cormac Brennick. He is in studio with me. He is the nominations man over at Airdrie, so he's the man you'll talk to when you call to talk about those stallions. And you know that little trip down memory lane, I love those little montages that our producer Lee puts together to intro those segments, because it really reminds you of how good these horses were when they were on the racetrack. I think sometimes we forget about that.
Yeah, it really does. It's great to kind of relive those moments, and you know that's what keeps us all excited about the game and excited about the stallions, and you know, looking back on how good they were as racehorses.
Where do you want to start? You want to start with some of the newcomers? You want to start with some of the established stallions? There's a lot to talk about.
There is a lot, yeah, plenty to go through. We have 9 stallions for this year. They're all at sort of varying stages of their career. We've got a lot of young guns that are coming through, one each year for the last few years. You know, we'll have Summerfront with his new 2-year-olds next year, so we can start wherever you like. We can start with the newcomers, I guess.
Let's start with the newcomers. Kick it off.
Sure. We have two for 2019. We brought in McCracken. Ian Wilkes trained him. He was a homebred for the Whittam family. He's a son of Ghost Sapper, which is close to my heart, having been many years at Edina.
Yeah.
So I see a lot of that pedigree in this horse. He's got that tremendous deep shoulder and strength of Ghost Sapper, along Gaskin, a little strong Gaskin. He really brings those elements from him into the pedigree. He's just stands just a tick over 16 hands, very balanced horse. And what he really brings to the table that made us so excited about him in particular is his precocity.
Yeah.
You know, undefeated two-year-old, which is not something that you get on that sire line very often. And especially even for Ian, you know, he's a very patient trainer, doesn't get the horses, you know, too cranked up early, lets them kind of, you know, chart their course a little bit and get their feet under them. And he came out and won in extremely impressive fashion on debut as a two-year-old. And that's, I think, a really important element.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me, and it says it when you go to, if you go to airdrewstud.com, you can get information on all the different stallions. But Ghost Sapper's only greatest stakes winning two-year-old son.
Yeah.
I mean, for the Hall of Famer. That's unbelievable.
It is, yeah. I mean, that just shows a little bit of uniqueness that he brings. And a lovely female family out of a Seeking the Gold mare. Second down by Wild Again. Third down actually is by No Double and is the first horse that the Whittams purchased at auction.
Ooh,
it was
really?
Tuesday evening. They bought her as a foal, I believe, and built the family from there. Have done an extremely good job.
Yeah, extremely good job indeed. McCracken, one of the newcomers to Airdrie Stud. Collected, you want to go there?
Yeah, yeah. How much time you got? he's you know, super horse. He's an absolutely beautiful physical. And, you know, one of the elements that makes him so attractive is he's a son of City Zip. And, you know, the late, great City Zip, he's obviously still ticking along, bringing up great horses year after year. But, you know, there's a real room in the market, much like the case of Ghost Sapper, real room in the market for a good son of City Zip that, you know, at his stud fee level and everything. And he fits the bill and physically he's pretty much wowed everybody. So we've been booked full with him since the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you know, we heard the clip in that montage before the segment started of Collected defeating Arrowgate in the Grade 1 Pacific Classic. And that, to me, was a performance that just embodied what this horse was was all about, his tenacity. He had every chance to, if he wanted to, he had every chance to fold in that race, and he didn't.
Yeah,
he just kept going and
going.
And
a mile and a quarter.
And a mile and a quarter.
A horse that has so much inherent speed to carry it, you know, against the likes of Arrowgate, a mile and a quarter really set him apart. And it was about 8 or 8.5 lengths back to Accelerate.
Yeah,
that day as well. So it was a legit field.
What goes into when you bring in a new stallion like Collected, like McCracken, and you start talking to breeders about them? What's the process? How does that all work? Are you looking for a specific mare, a certain nick, or is it pretty much, hey, if you have a good mare, we'll take that mare and get the stallion started? How does that all work?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in the case of a horse like Collected, you know, where we were basically oversubscribed, you know, we try to be as fair to as many people as possible. I always think, and speaking in sort of in my own personal sense, more than maybe the farm philosophy, I always think it's just as important who the breeder is as who the mare is in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
You know, because you want to get the people that are loyal clients that raise horses right, you want to get, you know, the progeny to those people as much as possible. And that's not to say we don't, you know, we purposely exclude people or anything like that. It's just it's part of the process is working with people you're familiar with and then also trying to cater to new people as well. So it's, you know, the mare side, it wouldn't be nicks. You know, you have to let the stallions tell you what they're good at. You know, you're always going to get a bit of a surprise with what crosses work so well. And you can't go into it thinking, you know, what's going to happen because they'll often prove you wrong.
Yeah.
You know? So you've got to let Mother Nature tell you that this is what's working. And you know, we like to look at physical matings, you know, but that's mostly on the side of the breeder. They know what their mare is and what they're going to throw and how well they match, but that's always a factor too. So you're trying to make an athlete first and foremost.
You mentioned Cormac, by the way, Cormac Brannick with me in studio. If you're looking to breed to one of the Airdrie stallions, give him a call. You can go to airdriestud.com to learn more about their stallions, and we'll talk more about them here in a minute. You mentioned coming from Edina Springs, now working at Airdrie with Brett Jones, with former Governor Brereton Jones, two of my favorite people in the business.
Absolutely.
It's a privilege to go to work out there every day, I would imagine. How do you describe and sum up that Airdrie Stud philosophy?
It's kind of like a big family. You know, I think it's, you know, everyone pulls the same direction. Everyone has the same, their eye on the same ball. You know, we're all trying to do the same thing. It's a very open communication. You know, I felt coming in, you know, they have a team in place, but I also felt like I was integrated and made, you know, like I've had some valuable input or whatever, you know, so that's a very welcoming kind of feeling and environment, and I think that's what makes it all tick. You know, the staff has been there a very long time. We have people like Mark Cunningham, who's the farm manager, who's, you know, I'm not even sure how long he's been there, but it's somewhere on the order of 30 years.
Wow.
And, you know, a great guy, and so many good horses have come through the hands of people like him and Richard Royster and, you know, Charlie Osborne, Benji, people like that have just been there a long time. So they're behind the scenes, but they excuse me, they make it all work, and that's, you know, what makes it work.
Yeah, I figure if I keep saying enough good things about them, eventually they'll let me come out and bow hunt on the farm with all the deer that they have running around.
Maybe
out
not
there.
That. Yeah.
That's what Brett says. Is my mom is never going to let you out here on the farm. Those are her pets.
That's right.
Well, they have a lot of deer. They have a lot of really good horses. We told you about a couple of the newcomers with McCracken and with Collected. How about some of the established stallions? Where do you want to go here? Maybe Creative Cause?
Yeah, Creative Cause is a horse that's really doing everything right. You know, he's the sort of the success story at this stage of his career. He's one of the leading third crop sires. He was white hot from around August, September time of 17 through about the same time this year. And then things have just cooled a little bit, you know, with the form cycles and some horses just taking a break. But he's got a lot of those big horses staying in training, the likes of Pavel and My Boy Jack, and probably Significant Form. I'm sure she'll stay around. You've got just the locker's loaded again for next year. And then he bred his biggest and probably best book of mares in 2018.
Yep.
Bred 146 mares at a stud fee of 20,000. We've left him there. He's getting very good support again. You know, we still have some room. It's just sort of, you know, the market's so polarized, but the spotlight's coming to the likes of him now, and we're picking up some really nice mares. So,
how is that number of mares determined for each stallion? How do you say, okay, this stallion gets 146, this one gets 150, this one gets 100? How does that
work? Well, we like to cap at 150, you know, so 149 is kind of our magic number. And then it's a case of whether you get there or not. You're not going to fill every stallion, but we like to keep a limit. I mean, it's still a big book, but there's some exclusivity as well. And it's also fair to the horses. I think you're getting, you know, fair to the breeders to get their mares in when they need to and so forth. But we try to get, you know, that kind of number and happy when it works.
We were at Gulfstream Park the day that Cairo Prince won the Holy Bull. And really, I mean, he established himself at that point as the leading contender for the Kentucky Derby. In my book, that was a dominating performance. He's a son of Pioneer of the Nile. Tell me a little bit about Cairo Prince.
He's, he's almost the perfect horse, really. You know, his market appeal, the progeny, the consistency of his progeny, the way they looked. He himself is such a beautiful, kind of a scopey, athletic horse.
Yep.
Just looks amazing. Any time, day or night, he's just so well made, and he stamps his progeny in his own image. So that's, you know, been better told by the market's results. I think he's had in his first two crops $18.5 million worth of yearling sell already.
Wow,
it's incredible.
Wow,
it's just one after another. He had a record priced yearling in his second crop, the highest priced yearling ever sold at OBS this past summer, which is not necessarily a booming market. I think it was 340,000.
Yep.
Just numbers like that just pop up again and again, and to do that in your second crop is just remarkable. His stud fee went up twice, from 10 to 15, then to 25. He's had 19 winners this year. There are horses that want to go two turns, are going to get better with age, is every indication. So he's really, you know, building an army of runners.
Yeah, and it's not, when you're talking about stallions, it's certainly important, vitally important, that they have good runners out on the racetrack to keep their name out there and to keep people breeding to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that horses like Cairo Prince are also commercial, that means a lot too. That's huge.
It does, yeah. That keeps the phone ringing. You know, that's what, because so many people just need to sell horses to stay positive and stay in the game, and that's critical.
Who else do we want to talk about? American Freedom?
Yeah, American Freedom. Yep. Yeah, he's a horse that he's a son of Pulpit from the last crop. He was a $500,000 yearling, and those looks are just painted all over him. He's a big, strong, just a really handsome devil. He was very popular last year. His first foals are going to arrive in the spring. He bred 152, so when I said we cap at 149, you've got to blame the new guy for that. We were similarly kind of overrun with him last year. We're partners with Gary and Mary West, and there are no better partners in the industry, in my opinion, than them. Both Airdrie and the West were each breeding at least 20 mares to him the first 3 years. So he gets 120 mares in that arrangement that really just kind of get him off the ground as part of the broader support. And we're very excited to see his foals arrive. I mean, if he throws himself, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it'll certainly be impressive. American Freedom, one of several stallions at Airdrie Stud. Summer Front, Upstart, they're also out there.
Yep, yeah, they're an Upstart's a year ahead of American Freedom. He's had his first weanling sell this year. They did very well. He had a median of 60,000 off a $10,000 stud fee. A keen in November average was a tick higher, about 65. So it really put him in a good, you know, showed a really good response. He throws a very pretty horse, you know, Scopey and athletic horses, just like he is himself. He was, you know, a little like Cairo Prince in the sense that he was a very, very good, you know, spring three-year-old. Winter, you know, two-year-old going in through the winter and on the Derby trail, showed a lot of that same ability, won the Holy Bull in devastating kind of fashion, yeah, and was DQ'd in the Fountain of Youth, which was a little controversial, you could say.
It was.
But he was really a very good, very talented horse.
Yeah, and Summer Front?
Summer Front will have two-year-olds next year, so he's a year ahead again. A horse I'm particularly excited about, I bred my own mare to him last year. He's a very, very good-looking horse, extremely well-bred. And I think, you know, I'm looking forward to those two-year-olds. I think there's every reason to believe there'll be plenty of speed among them. They look that way. They have that kind of walk and that compact, you know, good frame, and everything's in the right place. And it's going to be exciting.
Two horses we haven't gotten to yet include in Mark Valesky. We have less than a minute left in this segment, Cormac, so we can't say a lot about them.
Sure.
And it's too bad because Include has been just tremendous for a very long time. One of the established stallions there at Airdrie, yeah, and Mark Valesky, my sleeper horse for the Kentucky Derby. I remember him and how good he was.
Yeah, he was a very good horse. And you know, from limited sort of opportunity, he's a partnership with Woodford Thoroughbreds in Florida. And most of the mares came from Airdrie and Woodford in the first few years. He's had 9 winners from his first 14 starters. And he said the horse that ran second in the Nashua and the Remsen, and another stakes winner called back to his roots. It's been very encouraging.
Yeah, we'll encourage you to go to airdriestud.com to learn more. And as you can tell, Cormac, no notes in front of him during this segment. He rattled all that information off. He's on top of things. He knows the business. Give him a call. Give the folks at Airdrie a call. If you're looking for a stallion for your mare, you can't do any worse. Can't do any better than the folks at Airdrie. They do a great job.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah, well
Thank
done.
You.
Thanks
Merry
for
Christmas.
Being in studio, too. Merry Christmas to you, my friend. And go Steelers. Cormac, I waited for him to take the sip of water before I hit him up with that, but big Chiefs fan here, Cormac Brennick. And yeah, my thanks to him for being in studio with me for this Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence. We'll get to another break. We'll come back and turn our attention westward to Santa Anita. Opening day coming up the day after Christmas. Mike Willman, the director of publicity, will be with me here in just a moment. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms was the nation's number one sire of two-year-olds in 2017 by percentage of winners. His top runners include multiple graded stakes performer Rich Mommy, winner of the Grade 3 Sugar Swirl, multiple stakes winner and graded stakes performer Recruiting Ready, and stakes winners Taylor Spirit, He Hate Me and Sunset Ridge. In the ring, his yearlings have brought prices up to $220,000. Algorithms, standing at Clayton Farm.
In Kentucky, our biggest celebrities have 4 legs, and thanks to Kentucky Proud Horse Country, you can now have unprecedented access to these equine stars. From foaling barn to finish line and beyond, you can see it all. Log on to visithorsecountry.com to book your one-of-a-kind experience. With more than 30 horse country locations throughout the Bluegrass, you'll get access to multi-million dollar farms and facilities featuring Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown winners, famous broodmares, and champion sires. Space is limited, so book now at visithorsecountry.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Medaglia d'Oro is the horse with the Midas touch, and his 2019 Book of Mares is shaping up to be one of the best ever. That book includes Broodmare of the Year Lemons Forever, her champion daughter Forever Unbridled, champion sprinter Unique Bella, and 2-time Grade 1 winner American Gal, who sold for $3 million at Phasic Tipped in November.
$3 million, no one. I wouldn't want to get $3 million. Thank you. $3 million, $3 million. Blake Sand, you're out in the back. No mistakes. $3 million, $3 million, one. $3 million, no one. I wouldn't want to get $3 million. I'm going to get $3 million, one. $3 million, one, and all done. $3 million, now I'm gonna get $3 million, one, $3 million, one. Blake, $3 million, thank you.
And thank you all. Thank you, American Gal. She put on a show.
Medaglia d'Oro turns horses into gold. making him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
It's justified by length and a quarter. Baldoro taking a run at him, but really having to be pushed on by Castellano. Smith looks confident on Justify reaching the top of the stretch. Back in third is Core Beliefs, then Instilled Regard, Pepe Tonio. Justify leading past the eighth pole. He's a couple of lengths in front. Baldoro is closing on the inside. It's Justify by three quarters of a length. Baldoro trying ever so hard. But Justify, another exhilarating exhibition by the supremely gifted athlete. He's on a dizzying ascent to greatness, winning the Santa Anita Derby clearly from Baldoro, followed in by Core Beliefs and Instilled Regard.
Justify could not have been any more impressive in winning that Santa Anita Derby. You remember going into that race that there were some questions surrounding Justify. Would he be as good going that distance? Would he be able to carry the speed? All of those types of things. And I remember we broadcast that race here on the network. He answered them emphatically. And of course, we know the rest is history. He would go on to win the Derby, the Preakness, and the Belmont Stakes and sweep the Triple Crown undefeated. And the first horse ever to do that, ever to win the Kentucky Derby, at least since Apollo, without having started as a two-year-old. Ultra impressive. Of course, that Santa Anita Derby, one of the highlights of this year's winter spring meet at Santa Anita. It begins the day after Christmas. That's the traditional opening day. Several greatest stakes on the docket. They've already been drawn. And Mike Willman is the director of publicity at the Great Race Place. And he's with me now here on HRRN. Mike, welcome, my friend. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Great to be with you. It's an exciting time of the year for us out here at Santa Anita.
Yeah, it really is. Just a few days away from that opening day. And this is a meet that it's not hard to get pumped up for opening day at any racetrack, but certainly for that Santa Anita opening day and for this meet, it's pretty easy to get pumped up about what we're going to see.
Well, you know, in talking to people that have been around a long time, they say, well, you know, Wednesday is not an optimum day for our opener because I guess a lot of people are back to work day after Christmas when it falls like Christmas on Tuesday, so they work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. But to me, that is mitigated greatly by the fact that we're going to have 10 days between live racing here in Southern California. Los Al finished up, you know, last Sunday, the 16th. We opened 10 days later, and I really get a sense that that people are jonesing. You know, they're wanting to get the daily racing form, break it open, and take a look at these races. We've got four graded stakes, and, 45 horses entered in those four graded stakes. Two grade ones, the Malibu La Brea. We've got the San Antonio grade two, 300,000. Then the Mathis Brothers Mile on Turf, that's a grade two. And, for those folks with three-year-olds, fillies, and colts and geldings, the Malibu La Brea and the Malibu and the La Brea present their last chance to get a grade one before the end of the year. And of course the Mathis Brothers Mile, that's a grade two for 3 year olds as well. The San Antonio's older horses. And it looks like it's going to be a prelude to that $9 million Pegasus at the end of January there at Gulfstream Park. 102 horses entered for the 10 races, Mike, 16 in the Malibu, 14 will run 7/8. I mean, what's not to like? And we're guaranteeing $1 million in that 20-cent Rainbow Six jackpot on opening day. So a lot of reasons to come out. And with the 10-race card, we're getting started early with an 11:30 a.m. first post.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You mentioned all the number of horses that were entered. As I was flipping through, and I haven't done all the handicapping yet, but each and every race, at least those greatest stakes races, are loaded. They're big fields. They're competitive races. Should be a tremendous betting program.
No doubt about it in my mind. And we got a number of Eastern shippers, and we got the top jocks in the East coming out here. The brothers Ortiz, Irad and Jose. We've got Manny Franco. We got Robbie Alvarado. How about Johnny Velasquez? You know, you throw those guys in with the likes of Drayden Van Dyke, Mike Smith, Joel Rosario is here now full-time for the winter. I mean, this is just this is a world-class room here for opening weekend at Santa Anita. It's I tell you, I really, really think around the country people are going to take note. Baffert entered five in the Malibu. No question, McKenzie is going to be the short price favorite. And we're going to have another battle developing, it looks like, in the San Antonio with Battle of Midway and Dapster. They were separated, I think, by a head in the native diver down at Del Mar. And Dapster's a horse that he needs to break running. He's a little sluggish away from there. You really got to go to scrubbing on him. But he needs to get on terms early with Battle of Midway, who seems to love the fight. So, you know, and you look at the La Brea, we got nine of them. We got a real sharp cowbred on the outside named Spice Perfection. Baffert, no doubt, has got the favorite with Dream Tree. She's unbeaten in five starts. It's just a really, really good race. And the pick six will be races 5 through 10. And again, with that $1 million guarantee, Mike, it's going to be fun.
Mike Willman, Director of Publicity at Santa Anita, with me on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, talk about some of the other big-time races that we're going to see. You've got the Big Cap. You've got the Santa Anita Derby. Talk about some of the other highlights of the meet coming up.
Well, in an immediate sense, Saturday, we're going to have the last grade one of the year. That'll be the American Oaks, 3-year-old fillies at a mile and a quarter on turf. Now, we enter today for that, along with the grade three Robert J. Frankel. That's for fillies and mares. And on Friday, we've also got the Eddie Logan, which is a mile on grass. That's for two-year-olds, and that race is always a lot of fun. It's named for, I don't know if you've ever heard of Eddie Logan, but
sure.
He was the shoeshine guy that Doc Strube had run across in Pasadena while they were building the racetrack, and he said, hey, would you like to come to work for me? And he went to work for Dr. Strube starting opening day, Christmas Day 1934, up until his passing, I believe it was January of 2008 or 9, and a real, real character. So that's a special race, kind of a sentimental mark on the calendar.
Yeah, it certainly is, and one of those days that people will really be paying attention to. There's no doubt about it. Mike Willman with me here on HRRN. Mike, when did you start at Santa Anita?
Well, I've been there in various roles. The first time I ever worked there was January of 82. I was still in baseball then, and I worked, trained as a paramutual clerk. And so I got in the union. It took a while to get my days because I was out of state so much, but that was my first deal. And then this job here, it was, I believe, September 2005.
Yeah, to me, I tell everybody this, that if you're going to go to one racetrack in California, all due respect to Del Mar, I'm a Santa Anita guy. I love the mountains, just sitting there in the grandstand, looking at them come out of the chute on the turf course. And that downhill turf course is so unique, and it looks like they're running right at the base of the San Gabriel Mountains. To me, there's no better place. It's got to be like going to work at Disney World.
Well, I mean, it's just truly a picturesque setting. You know, we've got 320 acres, and it's an incredibly valuable piece of property. I'll just give you a little context on that. We had a five-acre parcel sell to our immediate northeast, and there had been a bar up there called the 100-to-1, which a lot of racetrackers were well familiar with over the years, and a hotel over there called the Santa Anita Inn. Well, that comprised about 5 acres. That was bought, and everything's been raised, and they're going to be putting a new Marriott hotel in there. And we're told that the purchase price on the 5 acres was $47 million, Mike.
Woo.
So do the math. I mean, we have a piece of land that just you can't believe, with all sorts of major thoroughfare frontage and so on, underground water, you name it. So, you know, we need to be profitable in what we're doing to remain what we're doing, and we're making great strides in that direction. You know, unused pieces of the property are going to be developed in time. That's Belinda Stronach's plan, and so moving forward, you know, we're excited about what we're doing, but we know we have to be doing a better job. We have to become more profitable to make this enterprise make sense to the owners.
Sure, sure. Mike, if you were to think back on your time there, and again, you've been there in various capacities, as you said, but if you were to pick out your favorite or maybe your couple of favorite Santa Anita moments, what would those be?
Well, Zenyatta comes to mind.
Yep.
You know, the Breeders' Cup Classic, the last to first, that was, when you look at that, she comes out of the gate, seems like she always did, just lallygagging. She's on her wrong lead under the wire the first time. You know, it's kind of like the Breeders' Cup Classic where she got beat by Blame at Churchill Downs. I thought she was going to be eased going into the first turn. And that was the feeling you had when the day she won. And then to see Smith decide, look, I've got a ton of horse under me, but I'm so far back, I can't swing out here going into the far turn. I'm going to lose too much ground. So he waited, and then, you know, she just knifed through that field, and Trevor Denman was all over it. And that's where I get back to the audiovisual aspect of racing or any sporting event. It's so, so important to the experience. And Trevor was all over Zenyatta and the move she was making. And, you know, it's probably the greatest moment in Breeders' Cup history, and they've had a bunch of them. So that one really comes to mind. Then another one is a real small kid when Johnny Longden went out a winner, and that was March of 1966 on a horse named George Royal in the closing day San Juan Capistrano handicap, mile and three-quarters on the turf. And you look at the film, and Longden at age 59 was, wow. It's really unbelievable. Manny Akaza was on the horse to beat, a horse named Tomcat. And, you know, Longden basically ran Akaza into a dead end going to the far turn on George Royal and came running the length of the stretch. He's head and head with Bobby Ussery and a horse named Plaque. And Joe Hernandez, you know, who in those days never got in the middle of a photo, but he kept the mic on and he said, and it's George Royal by a nose, you know. And sure enough, it was George Royal by a nose. That was, well, it was voted by the media at the time the greatest moment in the first 50 years of Santa Anita. So many other great moments, you know, maybe Snow Chief winning the Santa Anita Derby, and a lot of us thought that he was on his way to victory in Kentucky. That wasn't to be. It was Ferdinand, but Snow Chief bounced back in the Preakness and won that one. That was just a great moment because of the people involved, Whittingham and Mel Studi, and it was a lot of fun. I tell you, Larry the Legend winning the 1995 Santa Anita Derby, that might have been the noisiest time I've ever been at the racetrack. Gary Stevens had been in Hong Kong riding full-time, came back to ride this Illinois bred that was owned and trained by Craig Lewis, and, you know, he was able to outrun. He just kept to his task and ran down a horse named Afternoon Delights that Dick Mandela trained and was ridden by Kent DeSormo. Those are just great moments that are tough to replicate, Mike.
Yeah, so many great moments. And Mike Willman summing it up for you here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, got to get to a break, but appreciate the visit as always. Enjoy your Christmas, happy holidays, happy New Year, and enjoy opening day too.
Yeah, don't forget, if anybody's in the area, the free Santa Anita 2019 wall calendar with your paid admission on Wednesday, Mike, and we start early, 11:30 a.m.
He's the best, Mike Willman, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, enjoy it.
Thank you, sir. Merry Christmas.
All right, Merry Christmas. All right, going to get to one final break. By the way, my favorite Santa Anita memories, excellent meeting winning the Santa Anita Oaks in 1999. I was there that day, pretty special. She was my favorite filly of all time, and then watching Rush, the first horse we ever owned, win his first race he ever started. That's right, one for one down the hill at Santa Anita. I wasn't there. I was having a party here in Lexington, a watch party for Rush. Those are my two favorite Santa Anita memories for sure. Going to get to a final break. We'll update the poll question, wrap things up, and tell you about a shocking moment from Jeopardy this past week. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Power.
Taprit is still there. Master Plan is gaining. Master Plan at Taprit. Taprit still in front. Master Plan too late. Taprit will do it.
Passion.
It's Taprit. He makes another step forward on his way to Churchill.
Well done, young man. We'll report home four lengths to the good.
Performance.
Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish Warcry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
Gainsway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling turned classic winner and millionaire. Following a precocious stakes-winning two-year-old campaign, Taprit set a new stakes record in the Grade 2 Tampa Bay Derby before capturing the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes in his three-year-old season. Among the best-bred sons of Taprit ever to enter stud, out of Grade 1 Spinaway Stakes winner and multiple Grade Stakes producer, Appealing Zophie. Taprit, standing for $12,500 at Gainsway.
Power. Passion, performance, you know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
You know, our Jimmy John's new 9-grain wheat sub has the perfect amount of grain.
Yeah, it does. Any less it'd be grain lacking. Any more it'd be obnoxious.
9 grains. It's just so confident. I mean, it says I'm high quality, I'm substantial, I'm flavorful, but I don't have to prove myself to anyone.
This 9-grain wheat sub is practically an inspirational poster.
I want to possess the character and depth of this 9-grain wheat sub.
You guys talking about being that 9-grain wheat sub again?
Try our new 9-grain wheat sub, Jimmy John's. Wheat, yeah, freak, yeah.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
2 years ago today, Motown scored an authoritative victory in the Grade 2 Remsen in his stakes debut before going on to demonstrate an impressive turn of foot when winning the Grade 1 Hollywood Derby at 3. New to Coolmore America for 2019, Motown is a highly credentialed, beautiful young son of Uncle Mo, who has established himself as a leading sire with his runners on both dirt and turf. Motown is very attractively priced, and being such a good-looking horse, it is no surprise that he is proving incredibly popular with breeders. Call Coolmore America to book to him now before it's too late.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, back with you in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, getting ready to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum, and it's been a very busy show. Throughout the poll question at the top of the show, what is the greatest horse racing gift you have ever received? We've gotten some great responses to some new ones that have come in. A trip to the 2010 Kentucky Derby for my 40th birthday. That's cool. Great gift from the wife there. Someone gave me an amazing framed pencil drawing of Secretariat's Belmont photo as Ron Turcotte is looking under his shoulder for Sham. Yeah, that's neat too. And one other one here, watching the races, sitting with my son Jason, who was on your show, that is a special gift. Yeah, no doubt about it. Anytime you can be at the races with family, that is truly a special gift. My thanks to everyone who weighed in on that poll question. You can still do so at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, I told you that there was a shocking moment on Jeopardy this past. I watched Jeopardy, and look, I'm not great with that kind of trivia and those kind of questions. Every once in a while, I'll get on a roll, get a few questions right. But the people that are on there are brilliant, and they knock these questions out of the park all the time. Well, this was the question that Alex Trebek posed to the contestants this past week on Jeopardy.
600.
Bob Baffert trained two recent Triple Crown winning horses, American Pharoah in 2015 and this horse in 2018. Justify was the name of the horse.
Are you kidding me? You have to be kidding me. Well, I don't know what to think about that. I really do not. Obviously, we all know it because we're horse racing people. But the fact that not one of the contestants was able to come up with Justify as that answer, especially because it's recent history, is just shocking. And I don't know what that says about horse racing, but I just had to play that coming from our friend Tim Wilkin at the Albany Times Union, who tweeted out that clip earlier this week. Want to say thank you to all of our guests, Alicia Wins Hughes from the NTRA, Luis Contreras Dave Siegel of Trackmaster, Cormac Brennick from Airdrie Stud, and Mike Wilman from Santa Anita. Of course, my thanks to Chauncey, Sean C., for handling all the social media, and my producer, Lee Delapina, doing a great job here in our Lexington studios, our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. Jude and Anthony handling this show next Saturday, but I want to wish everybody throughout HRN Nation a very Merry Christmas, a happy holiday, and a very happy and safe and prosperous new year. For all of our guests, for Lee Delapina, for all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time. Go Steelers.